Dogs, a podcast about Tom Waits, kind of. And now your hosts, Marios Kritiotis and Dave O'Brien.
Hello and welcome to Rain Dogs. I'm Dave.
I'm Mar.
And this is the only podcast about music.
The only one.
Only one. Today, we are going to round out side one of Rain Dogs. So, we kind of teased this last time. Two more tracks on this side of the album. Both just bangers, I would say. Like, just triumph. Cool, like, as you said last time, triumphs of songs.
Yeah. Where how do we get here? You know, before we get yeah. into that, you know, let's do a very quick recap. You know, we've covered everything from getting shanghaied in Singapore, to some sort of Raymond Chandler character, like a Philip Marlowe guy. We've walked around. We've had Lincoln in the Bardo. We've gotten drunk. We've gotten drunk and ridden horses. We've done a New Orleans funeral. There's another song about a casket and a hearse. And then a song about arguably the second greatest song about being down and out in New York City. The first, of course, being Down and Out in New York City by James Brown. Very hard to
really
top
hard
that.
To beat that. Yeah, I don't think you're going to beat that one. But yeah, like really a song about struggling and hustling.
Yeah.
And to be honest, probably not making it.
I don't think I'm not sure the narrator in Diamonds and Gold ever made it out of that that conundrum. But
No, very much like an end of, what's that movie? Midnight Cowboy. Right.
Yes. Yeah.
Just like on the bus heading out, kind of thing. The guy is sick. Diamonds and Gold was very much that kind of song. So, and we've talked a lot about sort of like, you know, the sequencing and maybe like the sort of the arc of storytelling of this album so far. And you've sort of like got like the strange, like I think that we call it like almost the orientation songs at the very beginning, just sort of like let you know, hey. Everything's weird, and then like kind of goes to like Jockey Full of Bourbon, where you know you get a song, right? Like it's kind of grim, but it's beautiful in its own way. And then it goes to sort of like Tango Till They're Sore and Big Black Mariah. It's like and Diamonds of Gold, and it feels like it's almost I don't want to say regressing, but like it goes back to getting like weirder and weirder and weirder a little bit. And then now, like, how are we going to close this side? Because of course, this was made in 85 when both like everything was on, you know, there's on vinyls or cassette tapes,
right?
I think there would have been some CDs in 85, but like or laser discs. What were they using back then?
Yeah, I have to rewatch the Wedding Singer to see if the model that he gives the Drew Barrymore's fiance gives her a CD player. We'll go make sure that that's chronologically correct.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, the freakazoids that would like watch Mad Men and be like, that actually is the wrong lapel for 1963.
I'm pretty sure Adam Sandler does his research on that. He's
clearly,
he's a very thorough guy. He's notoriously detail oriented on that kind of thing. But regardless, like this was sort of like what, like, you know, the half of an album was kind of a big deal, right? Like that was. Chapter is too short, right? Like that was a book almost, or like a half of a book kind of thing. And now we're sort of like wrapping up a certain kind of arc within this narrative.
Yeah. And like you've mentioned, you've mentioned in the past, in past eps, like sequencing and how this was much more think tanked. You know, the order was much more think tanked when there was a manual kind of like aspect of playing it, you know, like,
yeah,
my friend Craig, he's another guy we need to convert. We need to convert Craig.
Craig
and producer Patrick Yinzer, we're coming for you because we want you to be Tom Waits fans. But Craig always makes jokes. Like, he's like, I like listening to records because it makes you get up. You know, like, you have to at least stand up to go flip the record one time. You got to do a little, there's a physical movement to it versus, like, you know, just putting your headphones on and zoning out for 2 hours.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, the first three songs on side one were, like, important, but, and so, like, what, you know, on the second side, those first couple were important too. And then, like, towards the end of side two, that's, like, kind of where people did, like, throwaway songs. Springsteen used to always, like, if you get a Bruce Springsteen album, this is like the fifth time we've mentioned Bruce Springsteen on this podcast, so sorry, but he's a big guy for me and Dave, so tough, deal with it.
You're just using up your Randy Newman credits for
yeah. But where he was really nuts about track five, like, he was a really weirdo about, because he was like, what's going to be like the second side track one, you know? So, like, if you look at Bruce Springsteen's albums, like, those middle, there's always a song in the middle, like, of the CD, right? Where, like, the sides didn't matter anymore, where you, like, there's a absolute banger. The most, the best example of this is on Darkness on the Edge of Town. Mm. I forget what the, hold on, I'm gonna have to play it for 1 second here. Oh, never mind. Racing in the Street. Oh, The Promised Land. So, The Promise,
That's such a great song.
Arguably the best song. I don't know. That's a tough one. We'll have to do a whole podcast on Darkness on the Edge of Town. But, you know, that to me is a just stone cold banger. And that was the side two, track one. So there you go.
Oh, yeah. Well, also, I looked it up. Track five on Born in the USA, which only came out a year ahead of this, right? Born in the USA was 84, so a year ahead of that. Track five of side one of Born in the USA is Downbound Train. Which is one of the most Tom Waits of all the Bruce Springsteen songs, right?
There you go.
track five of side two, Dancing in the Dark. So he really went almost the other direction.
Wow. Yeah.
The song that gave us Courtney Cox.
I can't believe that.
Yeah.
He ends that album with Glory Days, Dancing in the Dark, and My Hometown. Jesus.
Yeah, right? Like, what a way to go out.
I think, not to keep going on this, but I was just thinking about this too. I swear to God. I swear to God, I don't mean to talk about Bruce Springsteen this much. But, like, this album, I think, is like, there's like, we're due for a Born in the USA renaissance, because I think people hate on this album for, like, the wrong reasons. And I do think even the production is great. Like, No Surrender is, like, one of my favorite Bruce Springsteen songs of all time.
Yeah. It's, oh, yeah. So many of this is like, I think we're going through a Rumors by Fleetwood Mac revival, which we absolutely should. That album is amazing. It's an all-timer. But like, Born in the USA is due for, like, it's one of those songs or albums where, like, everyone, it's just so commonly misunderstood. Like, the whole, like, what was it, like, Ronald Reagan was using it for his campaign stuff, and Bruce and Springsteen had to be like, no, you're not getting this at all.
Well, like, and there's stuff on there that is, like, you know, I don't know. I mean, like, Working on the Highway, you know, he's got Darlington County, you know, was one of the first songs I ever heard from him. And I don't know. That's Stephen Hyden, actually, I think we've mentioned on this pod as well. He is a great writer, great rock and roll writer. His new book, he's got a book coming out in like a month about Born in the USA. So maybe this will be. That'll be the start to, you know, it'll serve the way that, like, the We Are the World documentary did for, like, and, you know, interest in, like, those 80s art, like Huey Lewis and all those, you know, guys from that. That's a great, have you watched that documentary?
It's so great. I have. We just watched a few weeks ago. It's a great documentary.
I couldn't believe I was so gripped by that. Like, I put it on.
Yeah,
you know,
same.
You know, my wife was like, oh, yeah, well, let's just watch it because, like, we want to see the Bob Dylan part, right? She knew, you know, how much of a psychotic freak I am. And, but it was really blown away. I didn't know the I had no idea about the specter of Prince, you know, and this potential for him to come. And they were kind of using his aide-de-camp, you know, as like a lure, you know, and it was very odd. I just had no idea. And I had no idea that they did that in one night. And I had no idea that they did it at like, you know, all night.
Right.
You know, it was such a cool documentary.
Yeah. I got to say, like, still not a huge fan of that song, but that documentary was amazing.
That song sucks. Oh, it's terrible. Well, you know, the Zappa, Frank Zappa's, you know, when he was being interviewed by like, you know, CNN or something after the censorship testimony, when he like did that whole big, you know, Tipper Gore thing. And they go, Mr. Zappa, wouldn't you, you've heard a lot of really bad stuff and you've said some really bad stuff in your music. Isn't there something in rock and roll that you wouldn't want your kids to hear? And he goes, yeah, we are the world.
You know what? He raised Dweezil and Moon Unit, right?
I've become Zappa-pilled and I won't talk about it on this pod because, I'm trying to get people into Tom Waits. And one way to not get someone into Tom Waits is to talk about Frank Zappa, which I think is like that you can't even begin to get your head around Zappa without Tom Waits. For Tom Waits is somehow a more accessible Zappa, because I think Tom Waits at least like is also an extremely likable person, where like Zappa was, I think, purposely a dick sometimes, you know, like in terms of you know, he was a great person to interview, his points were all really correct, but you know, I think he was kind of aloof on purpose and you know, not very nice to other musicians, I don't think. Where Tom Waits is like amazing. He was on Dave Letterman, you know, one of Dave Letterman's final episodes, and he's just an extremely nice person.
This, to be clear, this is a pro Zappa podcast.
We're a pro Zappa podcast.
Tune in for our next podcast, The Zappatistas.
Yeah. Oh man, that's gonna be it for sure.
So. That's gotta be taken already, right?
yeah, you're probably right. Yeah, and there are a lot more Zappa free, like the people who are into Zappa are like so psychotic, you know, so I'm sure there's already a, not to alienate them, because again, I am into him and I am psychotic, so.
Yeah, I still haven't gotten that into him. Like a really good friend of mine, hey Jake, what's going on, has always been a huge Zappa fan, and like, I respect it. I'm just not there yet. Maybe Tom Waits will get me, like, maybe he's the gateway drug, but.
Well, I mean, and that does bring it back to Tom Waits, where like, you know, we've talked about this, you know, I think we mentioned this in our, again, on Clovis, which is still my favorite ep, even though it was such a disaster, is, you know, there is a moment with Tom Waits where it clicks, and like, it doesn't even necessarily have to be this album. You know, we picked this album because we think this is the one. Yeah, I do remember like hearing something from like Mule Variations and being like, well, this is kind of weird, you know, and like this, you know, I'm not really for this. I don't like this guy's voice. You know, at the time I was listening to like NoFX and shit. So like, I was just like, I don't want to hear this. And it came around and like, it kind of found me, not to, you know, be corny. And I think the same thing is with, you know, with any artist, that like any artist who's like important and you don't really know why they're important, like it always clicks, you know, with any of them, where you're like, oh man, it just takes like one song. So maybe one of these ones are for those of you out there that aren't massive Tom Waits fans. Maybe one of them is waiting for you right here on Rain Dogs.
Yeah. I will say, of like the Tom Waits song, like if I had to like sell someone who's not into Tom Waits on like Tom Waits, this would be the album I go to. But if I had to pick out like one or two songs, it would probably be one of the songs we're talking about this time around. Yeah.
Right. So we might as well, let's kick it right off then.
Yeah. So song number 8, Hang Down Your Head. Push your
today, you have found another, oh baby,
So some great song, powerful song. The only song on the entire album that he is not the sole like songwriting credit for, because this one is co-written with his wife, Kathleen Brennan. We've talked about a little bit about before.
Yep.
I think a photographer and like a sort of an artist. She's like been involved with a lot of his work. They've been married since 1980. Like, I think they're still married today. But, you know, when you think about, like, the public perception of Tom Waits, like, the fact that he's just sort of been, like, married for, you know, married to the same woman for, like, almost 45 years at this point is...
Yeah.
Does not fit, right? Like, you think about, like, the genre of musician he is, or, like, just, like, the type of guy he seems like. You were just talking about how, like, he's really just a nice guy. Like, you'd expect him to be on his, like, fourth or fifth wife by now, but no.
Right. Yeah. This is nuts. I just clicked this. It's so funny. Last episode, I don't remember when, but I mentioned Cork, Ireland.
Yeah, she's from Cork.
She was born in Cork, and she actually grew up in Johnsburg, Illinois, which is a song from, isn't it from Swordfish Trombones or Frank's Wild Years? I can't remember. But he has a song called Johnsburg, Illinois.
Presumably about... where she's from.
Yeah. Oh, okay. So I just clicked it and he included it, blah, blah, blah. It's a short, poignant love poem to his wife. Oh, so he did. Okay. That's cool. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I didn't know she was the primary songwriter in this.
So co-writer. She's got the co-writer credit. I don't know how involved she was.
Well, when we first mentioned this album, or when we first talked about this song years and years ago, because we did cut an ep about Hang Down Your Head, and we never released it. There's somewhere in the archives. We'll have to dig it up. Yeah. You know what? For our Patreon, we'll do like
premium content. Yeah, yeah.
Like what headspace we were in 2021 or 2022, whenever we recorded it. Like,
our Black Mariah level subscribers will be able to get that.
Yes, Black
episode.
Mariah subscribers.
Yeah.
But you had the funniest. I mean, no, you had like one of the realest points on the planet is like right when we listened to the song while we were talking about it. And you say,
yeah,
this is the first song where you like hear it and you go, oh, Tom Waits actually can sing. Like he can actually sing.
Yeah. Like he actually has a very nice voice when he wants to. Now, again, there's still something like gravelly about it in
for
this.
For sure. For sure.
But like this is basically a lullaby, and it's like, it's a very pretty song. The lyrics are nice. No one's talking about, there is no mention of peg legs. No one is talking about, like, you know, there's no mention of, like, obvious mention of death or anything. It's just, like, a really nice, sweet, touching song. Like, it's almost like a lullaby. You know, if an ogre were to sing a lullaby to a drunk, it would sound like this.
I love the mention of Marie. It's such a simple, like, rhyme, but, like, you know... You could have easily just said "Hang Down Your Head for Me Again," you know, like.
Yeah.
I'm talking, of course, about the chorus that goes "Hang down your head for sorrow, hanging down your head for me, hang down your head, hang down your head, hang down your head, Marie." I just love that, and that's at the end when he's closing out. I think he has like two versions of the chorus, but it's almost like. It has the melody. Now, later on, I don't want to, like, not to spoil it, but there is a song that Mr. Waits does describe as his first country song.
Oh.
But this one, to me, has some similarities. This is almost, like, not even, like, country as much as, like, this is kind of almost a power pop song. Like, I'm going to get struck by lightning for saying that, because I've never thought of Tom Waits as a power pop. But like that guitar riff is, I mean, that could be like a big star guitar riff. I don't know who's playing. Is this another one where Mark Ribot? So this was a single. Hang Down Your Head was the B side for this was Tango Till They're Sore. So that's cool. Ribot played guitar.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and it does make sense. This is the single. This seems like one of the songs that like a record producer or like, sorry, a label executive would listen to like, okay, I can do something with this.
Right. Like, okay. It took seven songs. Actually, you know, what was the first single was actually Jockey Full of Bourbon. So that's funny.
That makes sense.
I'm looking right now. And then it was Jockey for the Bourbon, Hang Down Your Head, and then Downtown Train was the third
which
one.
We'll get to, which is another great song. Yeah, yeah, I think, yeah, those all make sense to be the singles from this album.
yeah.
And I don't mean that like throwing any shade at all. Like,
no, no. This is
you listen like, to the album and it just makes sense. Like, okay, these are what can go on the radio.
Yeah, this one is easily, I mean, at this point of the record, this is the clear-cut most accessible song.
Yeah. Maybe not a coincidence that it was also co-written with someone else.
yeah. She's like, Tom, you got to bring it in. Okay. We got to, you're going too far here. Let's just make a love song. Just write a love song. You know, like,
yeah, it's just like, it begins, hush a wild violet, hush a band of gold, hush, you're in a story I heard somebody told, like you're in a story I heard somebody told is again that we've talked about before about like those Tom Waits lyrics that just sort of like sear into your brain and stick with you. And that's one of them, right? Like that it seems so much like a parent telling their kids something, or, you know, just something very reassuring you're telling someone.
And I love, like, you know, it's like kind of corny rhymes, like, you know, and not, it's like a rhyme that I would like write when I was like, you know, in high school and I was writing Blink-182-esque, you know, shitty pop punk songs with my shitty pop punk band. Shout out to The Distance Between. I actually just saw my former bass player downtown, Brian. Was that, what up, Brian Kane? Looked great, hasn't aged a day, way less grays in his hair than me, but I love it. Says hush, the final verse, hush my love, the rain now, hush my love was so true, hush my love a train now, but it takes me away from you. And it's like so funny because like even in a song like this where like he almost goes against all of his best and worst impulses, you know, Tom Waits is like, you know, Tom Waits goes his sicko mode, you know, his like Tom Waits mode is like to just start breaking stuff and like growling and like we mentioned with Big Black Mariah, like strutting around the studio to show like how he wants the guitar riff to be played. And like this is such a more subdued, like he's just going against everything he wants to do, and in doing so creates a song that like I could hear the Beach Boys covering, or like, you know, there, it's something that is a lot more just accessible. It's in a major key. It might be the first song in a major key of the whole freaking album so far. You know, I really, I mean, you could, yeah, I think you could count Big Black Mariah as a major key probably actually. Yeah. So.
But that said, the song still seems to be about heartbreak, right?
It's like, right. It's about like love gone sour for sure. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's going away. He's on the train. He's going away from his, you know, love.
Yeah. You have found another. There's some implications that like maybe someone's fallen out of love with him or someone's found someone else or he's going on a train, which Tom Waits does like to sing about trains.
That son of a bitch. There's nobody who loves trains more than Tom Waits.
He loves a train. Which again, you know, now that public transportation is cool again, Tom Waits is due for his revival.
Pete Buttigieg clearly listened up, you know.
He needs to, if he hasn't. Because really, Tom Waits is like, you know, pro-train agenda is what's going to save our climate.
Here's hoping. Here's a wild piece of trivia, which I'd love to hear this because I love her, but I guess Lucinda Williams covered this song quite a bit.
Really?
And
wow.
So then she made, she recorded a version of it for the the crime drama series Crossing Jordan, from 2003. She did it. And it was a bonus track on her album World Without Tears. I'm not familiar with that one from Lucinda. Yeah. Obviously, I'm obsessed with Car Wheels on the Gravel Road from her.
Yeah. I mean, Lucinda would do a great job with this. I don't think I've heard that cover either.
We'll cover it on our, no pun intended, we'll cover it on our Tom Waits covers.
Covers, yeah.
You know what's cool about, I'm looking at the single for this and like the cover of the album of the, it's like one of the funniest. It's like the most Tom Waits cover I've ever seen in my life. It's like him in a dark suit with like a striped shirt. He's got his freaking like soul stripe. You know, he doesn't even have a soul patch.
Oh, yeah, a little soul patch kind of. Yeah. But
it's like a strip, you know? And like, and then it says Tom Waits in Rain Dog's Yellow. And then it just says, hang down your head.
Hang down your
and
head.
He just looks so like, he looks so like somber.
Yeah.
It,
like
it's like the most classic. It's so funny. He's such a funny, yeah, like, his whole looks, we could do a whole episode on his looks, you know?
Yeah. It's a, he's got some fashion for sure. Yeah. Like that's like an almost Beetlejuice looking shirt kind of thing. Like
definitely.
Under his,
yeah.
Yeah.
Great aesthetic, you know, that guy. You could, even if you don't know him, you know, like, you know, that look, you know, you've seen, you know, I'm thinking of like the pompadour, you know, I'm thinking like the 90s, you know, in a suit that just looks dirty. You know, he's always in a suit that looks kind of dirty.
Yeah. For like, for this single cover, I would describe it as like a rockabilly Jack Skellington. Hang Down Your Head, just a beautiful song, like, yep, haunting and heartbreaking in all the right ways. Again, not like, it's a simple song, but that's what makes it so powerful.
Well, yeah, big fan of it. I think it's, you know, and again, at 2 minutes, 32 seconds, you know, it does everything it needs to do. You know, another great guitar performance from Mark Ribot, ironically, vastly different. This one, he's playing pretty straightforward, licks here. Great, beautiful. Like, you know, he's got this nice tone on it, you know, that, but he's not doing, you know, those kind of disjointed, kind of dissonant, you know, solos where, you know, I'm thinking of the clap hand solo or like some, even on, Tango to the, or not Tango to the Soul, Jockey for the Bourbon, you know, there's this, his solos get a little weird, you know, he just kind of, he does, there's nobody like him, you know, but in this one, I had to look up if he was playing in it, because it just sounded like such a straightforward, I thought for sure it was like, it sounds like the Heartbreak, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers would have done a great version of this song. This would have been a good one for
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah. I can see like Joni Mitchell doing a really good version of this song too.
Oh, yeah. Like an acoustic version. Yeah.
Dude. Yeah.
It's a great song. Yeah. And again, you know, we talk about the ups and the downs. And again, the sequencing choices, what he was, you know, wanting to say, versus what maybe, you know, and he was the Tom Waits, you know, is credited as the producer of this, of the album. You know, he, like, you know, there is no, you know, Steve Albini to this to this album. What's interesting is the guy who he had doing the mastering and the mixing, this a guy named Robert Musso and Howie Weinberg. I'm really curious to see. I don't know anything about them in terms of their discography of like who they've worked with, but I have to imagine,
I mean, it's,
you know, they were part of the vibe of this for sure.
I mean, it's pretty impressive. You look at like Howie Weinberg is huge. Just like just throwing out some names of some albums he worked on. Nevermind.
Oh, yes. Yeah. And yeah. And he did
Melancholy, Infinite Sadness, Intergalactic. I mean,
he worked with the Beastie Boys a lot. He worked with Gary Clark Jr. Wow.
Which doesn't.
Yes.
Oh man, yeah. He did Mama Said Knock You Out, LL Cool J.
Oh, like, my god. Call it a comeback. I've been here for years. I'm rocking my pants, putting suckers in fear,
making the tears rain down like a monsoon. Listen to the bass go boom. Yeah, I mean, wow. Like, well, like we gushed a lot about like the like all the work that went into this album and like all the people working on it. Like, you know, we talked about Keith Richards, I think, right, in the last episode doing a song. Like, there is some, there are some heavy hitters working with Waits to make this thing happen.
What are we at? What track are we at? Number?
Time is actually rounding out. So this is going to be the end of side one, which is the ninth song. So Time, number nine, comes in at number nine.
The smart money's on Harlem, and the moon is in the street, and the shadow boys are breaking all the laws. And you're east of East St. Louis, and the wind is making speeches, and the rain sounds like a round of applause. And Napoleon is weeping in the carnival saloon. His invisible fiance's in the mirror. is going home. It's raining hammers, it's raining nails. It's true, there's nothing left for him down here. And it's time, time, time. And it's time, time, time. And it's time, time, time that you love. And it's time.
Kind of similar to Hang Down Your Head in a lot of ways. I feel like it's sort of a good spiritual successor to that one. It's sort of paced. It's kind of haunting and beautiful in a way. It's very like mournful and reflective. It was one of my favorite songs on the album for a long, long time.
Same. Yeah.
It's
kind of
just
a no-brainer.
Yeah. Like it's, I mean, you know, Tori Amos has covered it. We kind of jokingly, like in early episodes, talk about like, it's not until like track four that you get an actual song. Like this is a song.
Oh yeah. This is like a ballad, you know?
Yeah. Like the closest to the closest thing to a ballad you're going to get.
Like
a medieval.
It reminds me of I don't know. I mean, it's like, first off, I just have to, this guy, the way he sets a mood, the way he makes a setting, is almost Steinbeckian, in terms of the way he can immediately make you feel something about the atmosphere. And, again, to go from, you know, an up-tempo song where like, you know, there's a drum kit, you know, in Hang Down Your Head and a bass line, there's not a lot of like pop bass lines, you know, in Tom Waits songs. There's a poppy bass line in Hang Down Your Head. And then to come out of that with what I think is the best, you know, like this is always like a shitty prompt on like, you know, in some engagement farm social media account where they're like, what do you think's the best opening line of a song ever? You know, and you know, people weigh in and retweet and whatever.
Oh, yeah.
But I this is my favorite opening of any song, any genre whatsoever. It opens, well, the smart money, again, no context here. You know, you're just dropped in. I love that about him. I cannot emphasize enough how great, because it's like he knows you're smart enough to kind of come to your own conclusions too. Like he's not going to hold your hand. Again, like, you know, I brought this up like the last time, but it's not like Stan Rogers, who does great story songs, you know, this Canadian folk singer, who passed away sadly in a plane crash, at the height of his career. He's like pretty young, you know, where he begins the song like, oh, the year was, you know, this, or, oh, you know, that this one is like just right in. But that first verse, the smart money's on Harlow and the moon is in the street. The shadow boys are breaking all the laws. And you're east of East St. Louis, and the wind is making speeches, and the rain sounds like a round of applause. And like, there's the rain again. You know, he's constantly talking about, you know, the rain in this album. You know, obviously being Rain Dogs, but I love and you're east of East St. Louis.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I just think that's so great because, you know, East St. Louis is like a notoriously unhappy place. So what's east of East St. Louis? You know, it's got to be something even more unhappy, more down on your luck. Than even East St. Louis. And I love that he's singing kind of in second person here too. You know, I love using the second person narrative. And it's like, I'm not east of East St. Louis. But it drops you there. It makes you feel that immediately.
Yeah, I love, and it seems silly, but I do love that line, when you're east of East St. Louis. That almost sounds like he's setting up a kind of fairy tale place, like an east of the sun, west of the moon kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like in the distant kingdom, east of East St. Louis kind of thing. And this song actually like kind of ties together a lot of the things we've mentioned throughout. So we've got, you know, your reference to sort of like a not necessarily high profile or kind of like down on his luck American city with East St. Louis. We have some, We have a mention of Napoleon. Napoleon is weeping. He in is the
Napoleon
sword.
Is all over this record.
Yeah,
that's so interesting.
Yeah, and there remembers like a train. We got a train mentioned.
There's another
in
train.
Here.
Yeah.
There's another train. Yeah. You know, he's like it. I don't know if he's like purposely sort of pulling like little things from like what he said or other, you know, from other songs, or like these are just sort of patterns that have continuously emerged throughout all the songs on this album when he was writing them. But while it doesn't sort of musically feel like a lot of the songs that have come so far, like, because musically it's much closer to like Hang Down Your Head. It's much more of a, like, you know,
yeah, another major key.
Slower,
yeah,
another major key, another slower, thoughtful, like really melodic. But like, you know, you can see all the elements of stuff in there too. Like, you know, lines like, you know, well, things are pretty lousy for a calendar girl. The boys just drive right off the cars. Like, you know, like you have people going through stuff. You have some like really intense imagery. You have, you know, just like some lines that'll really stick with you. Like, honestly, the song has it all. It's not like, I don't think this is, doesn't feel like an archetypal Tom Waits song, just because it's so, you know, it sort of cuts against like what a lot of we've come to expect this album, which is sort of, you know, like really unusual, like rhythm. And like, you know, like he's not like banging a 2x4 on anything to get any sounds out of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's acoustic.
He's acoustic. He's like, he's just singing. This is just one of those songs where it reminds me, like, oh, he's got a voice. He can sing when he wants to. He just doesn't always want to.
Yeah. The only instruments, you know, Tom Waits plays the guitar, and, Mark Ribot, I just looked up that, it was a hollow body, this old beat up hollow body that Tom Waits was playing on this record and on the demos, which I would love to hear. That's another thing. You don't hear, like, Tom Waits is not an artist that like releases a lot of like glimpses into the like way he makes stuff. And I kind of like appreciate that about him. You know, like, you know, when you get like an extended edition album of anyone, you know, like, you like Green Day just did this with like Nimrod, where they were like, you know, it's whatever year, you know, anniversary of Nimrod. I think it was actually the 30th of Dookie too this year, which is cool. But
shut your mouth.
Yeah. but with Nimrod, there was, you know, like some demos and some other things that had been unreleased, including one song that ended up being on Warning.
Please, can you apply? Well, my sleepwalking eyes open wide. Making your mascara bleed, speeds on your face, leaving traces of mistakes.
And it was fun to hear, like, how it got worked into what it ended up being, right? You know, like, and that's the cool thing about demos. That's what get people freak out. You know, REM fans go nuts about, you know, the Athens demos of, you know, what's that one record that I love? Life's Rich Pageant. You know, some of the Athens demos are you know, are arguably better. I do think Swan Age, the Athens demo is better than the album demo. But that'll be for the REM podcast. But I like that, you know, you don't really hear that from Tom Waits often. Like, he doesn't really release shit that has, like, you know, half-baked stuff on it. Like, it's really just mostly complete works with very little of a peak. And I just like appreciate that about it. But also, it's only him on guitar. And there's a guy on double bass. I just lost it. Larry Taylor is playing the double bass.
Who I think is like a pretty well established.
He's he passed away in 2019, but he played in the Monkees. He played, he was a session musician for Jerry Lee Lewis. Yeah, so he was he was in a lot of good bands, session musician too, and there's a guy playing the accordion, and that's it. For, I mean, this is a very spare song.
It's also, I think, by a little bit, the longest song on the track so on the album so far. Like, like, you know, we've talked a few times about how short these songs are. This clocks in at just under 4 minutes.
Yep.
Which makes sense. It's like a much slower pace. It's much more of a meditation, really, more than anything else. It's a song talking about time, and it's taking its time by his standards. But yeah, like the first half of this album is just over 25 minutes.
This one also has the most words, you know.
Oh, by far. Like we've, you know, described some of the others as like almost nursery rhymes or anything like this. This is like, if you want to look, like sit down and look at the lyrics, this one like feels like the most, there's just most words on the page. There's just the most going on lyrically with
this. It's the most dense, but, and it reads like an epic, you know, and I love, and again, like everything in time, this to me, I feel like, you know, it's not, I don't think it's objectively the best song. I don't think it's my favorite song, but I feel like it might be like the thesis of the album, because I think, you know, so many of these themes, like if you just look at the second verse, and they all pretend they're orphans and their memory's like a train. There's a train again. You can see it getting smaller as it pulls away, and the things you can't remember tell the things you can't forget that history puts a saint in every dream. And like that to me is like, you know, it's just such a, like, it's such an interesting meditation on memory. There's this, you know, I was going nuts about, this guy, W.G. Sebald. Have you ever read this guy? He's,
no.
He wrote a book called The Rings of Saturn. He was a German novelist. He wrote, just a couple novels, and then he, passed away from a heart attack. But he was like an English professor, but he's from Germany, but he studied in England and lived, I believe he lived in England. And he, there's a book called The Rings of Saturn of his, that it's the only book I've read of his. I have a couple others, but, what he does is he reads a bunch of stuff that he's interested in. He gets like 10, you know, 8 or 9 things that he's interested in. And this one, it's like the writer Thomas Brown, the silk production in pre-Nazi Germany, some coastal town, the history of some coastal town, the Rings of Saturn, which, you know, is where he gets the book title from. Just like almost a rapid fire of topics that he's interested in. Researches the shit out of them. And then the novel is him walking around, recalling the things that he learned about all these topics. And again, it's like that unreliable narrator, type thing where like, is this all true? Like, I don't know if this is like, I'm not fact checking any of this, you know, what he's writing about. And then he even mentions, he says, there's a not even like, what do they call it? Like an epigraph or whatever, like, where it's, he writes, the rings of Saturn consist of ice crystals and probably meteorite particles describing circular orbits around the planet's equator. In all likelihood, these are fragments of a former moon that was too close to the planet and was destroyed by its tidal effect. And like, to, you know, you can say, okay, he was just being scientific there, but I think he was talking about how memories break up and kind of orbit our lives as we go on and on and on, and they change. They're materially changing every minute. And that's what, you know, this verse reminds me of, like, history puts a saint in every dream. You know, there's a good guy and a bad guy. If you and I had a disagreement, you know, we turned into old men in our memories. One of us is the good guy and one of us is the bad guy. And
for sure,
memory just has a funny way of playing tricks on us. And I think all these songs about life and death he's going, talking about, you know, I just think that's such a common theme throughout it all.
And I mean, memory won't just play tricks on you. It'll leave you behind like a train, like
that damn train.
Yeah. Damn train. What a fun fact, or like just a fact about the rings of Saturn that just sort of, I just remembered, that kind of blows me away every time. Sharks are older than Saturn's rings. Like the species, like, yeah, by like tens of millions of years. We think of like the rings of Saturn as being, you know, like cosmologically ancient, but like they're about like 400 million years, something like that. old, where there are things on Earth that have been around way longer than that and that are still here with us.
That's freaking crazy, man.
Right?
Damn, that was that just like kind of blew my mind. I did not know that. And then the other thing about this song, what do you think about that last I love like the last verse when he's like, things are pretty lousy for a calendar girl.
Yeah.
And the boys just dive right off the cars and splash into the street. But like that final, it's so interesting that he goes with Fiddler on the Roof, and let's smack the Bob Dylan button. We're doing it right now. I think Bob Dylan's best song. It's not my favorite song, but Visions of Johanna, I think, is probably the best Bob Dylan song. Certainly the best. It's one of my favorite poems just on its own. But the final verse of Visions of Johanna, which is like, you know, this, again, like almost a Homeric poem. The final verse is the fiddler steps to the road and says everything was bought, which was owed. But it's all about the fiddler getting off the roof. And it's interesting that the final verse here, and I don't think Tom Waits ever even cared about Bob Dylan or listened to Bob Dylan. Like, I don't think Tom Waits's like influences are like not of this world. I really believe that.
I have to imagine he's familiar with Bob Dylan.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you know, but like, I don't think he's going through, you know, like everybody who's ever been a musician or been in a band, you know, like you listen to somebody and you're like, I'm gonna take this, right? Like, this is gonna be something I'm gonna very tastefully crib from. And like, I just don't see Tom Waits, but like, it's just interesting that this is the most Visions of Johanna-esque song Tom Waits has like made, you know, where he's putting these really intense visuals. They're vivid. You know, there's some bit of a story here. You know, there's somebody obviously being nursed back to health after like being east of East St. Louis and things going wrong for them. And then, so to have it end with, you know, as the dish outside the window fills with rain, there's the rain again. He mentions rain like 10 times. It's raining hammers. It's raining nails. He mentions, as the dish outside the window fills with rain, just like a stranger with the weeds in your heart, pay the fiddler off till I come back again. You know, like, it's just interesting that he ends with a fiddler, in a similar way that, that Dylan did in Visions of Johanna. Just something I can't help but notice. Cause again, I'm a psychotic freak.
Well, that's why you're hosting this podcast. But yeah, it's just a beautiful song all around. And like all of the songs on this, dense with allusions and imagery. So, you know what? Maybe there was something there. Like, there's something intentional there. I will say, like you said, a lot of rain imagery, which is maybe not surprising in an album called Rain Dogs, but rain does show up a lot in this album. And also, it just started raining here. But yeah, like, I think it's a powerful ending to this side of the album, especially like considering how the album started. Like, it was a very abrupt beginning with Singapore and a bunch of other stuff. And this one is kind of like, hang down your head, and then time is just sort of almost like gently lulling you to sleep or sort of putting you to bed. And, you know, your blood pressure is spiking at those, like with the early songs at the beginning of the album. And now, like, you know, it's much more peaceful. I don't know if it's soothing, but it's definitely much more of a sort of a lower heart rate, sort of more of a gentler music than some of the other stuff that we've had so far.
Yeah, it's a really, I think it rounds out like an interesting side of music. And again, I just think the quality continues to like rise. You know, it just is so interesting. You know, I mean, Jockey and Tango, I think, are objectively better than Big Black Mariah, Diamonds and Gold, and Hang Down Your Head. You know, at least for me, like, I find myself listening to Jockey Full of Bourbon and Tango Till They're Sore a shit ton. Not that I don't listen to the rest. But, you know, Hang Down Your Head and Time, you know, to conclude this, you kind of get a tour of, all the Tom Waitses at this point. Like, this is every Tom Waits character is present on this side. You know, you get the whispery kind of scuzzy Tom Waits, you get the balladeer, you get your classic slow song. You know, every Tom Waits album has this kind of classic, beautiful slow song. That's kind of wistful and sad, but, and you can't even really describe why it's sad. You know, all he's really missing is like a 12-bar blues song, which he likes to do. And we get a bunch of them on the second half. So, you know, it's nothing wrong with that, but, just a tremendous, collection of songs for this first side. Some of the most seminal, I think, works, you know, if you look at the, you know, not that the Spotify plays mean anything, I kind of hate that they show them. Cause I feel like sometimes with a new artist, I prejudge, you know, if a song has a lot of spins, I don't really want to listen to it, cause it's like the popular one. You know what I mean?
You go for like the second or third, like most listened to song just to show you're authentic and cool.
Right. But, you know, these are some of his most played songs, you know, Clap Hands, has 15 million, you know, Jockey Full of Bourbon 13. So these are big, you know, big numbers. Time's done 9 million. It's not a secret that these are some of his most, you know, classic works. And just a perfect first side. I can't wait to get to the second, just to talk about. There's some interesting things. Talk about choices. You know, like there's some very interesting choices made again right out of the gate on the second side. So that'll be really fun to kind of talk about. We're really kind of in the shit now, and I think if you've stuck with us this far, you got it. I think people got a pretty good taste of what this guy's about.
Yeah, I mean, I think we sort of like talk about, you know, introducing someone to this album and the songs that like might put them off or they might get into. I think by the time you've got this far, you've listened to Time, like you have a pretty good sense of the full range. And I think even if, you know, you hear Singapore or Cemetery Polka and you're still not quite sure what's going on, by the time like Time, like the last bars of Time sort of like fade away, you've gotten enough sense out there that there's something in everything we've talked about so far where you kind of think like, okay, I kind of see where he's coming from, or I think like there's something here that I can work with. There's sort of a hook in there somewhere. Maybe it hasn't clicked yet, but like, you know, you're starting to get the lay of the land and you're starting to, I think you can sort of see the potential in there for like, I'm not into this yet, but there's enough material here for me to work with.
And then like, it surprises me how much, you know, by the time I get to Time, I kind of like want to hear Singapore again.
Oh yeah.
You know, just like again, the cyclical nature of life, you know, I mean, you know, I miss it almost, you know, when like, I wish I could like Eternal Sunshine my brain and go back and hear Singapore for the first time again. So great. Big milestone here. We're done with side one of Rain Dogs. So, stay tuned, to the next episode. We will, dive headfirst into side two, where many twists and turns abound. I don't want to spoil anything, but I'm going to go ahead and make two predictions. There's going to be some precipitation, there will be, at least two trains. I think there'll be at least two references of trains.
Oh, there'll be trains. You know they're going to be trains.
The over-under. I bet the over on train references.
I don't know if there's any Napoleon references on side two. So that'll be fun to
check out. So, that does it, Dave. I think we, I think if there are other Tom Waits podcasts out there, go ahead and retire now. We've clearly covered all there is to cover about this record. And, we can retire. We've done it. We did the whole first side. We got further than we did the last time we did this. So pat yourself on the back, bud.
That's true. And you know what? You know, we're not done yet. We're going to come back soon with side two. And then, you know, from there, I don't know. Maybe we'll take on some other Tom Waits works. Maybe we'll just talk about one of the other many non-Tom Waits bands that we spend as much time talking about in this podcast. At the very least, we hope, even if you don't come out a Tom Waits fan, we hope that you can sort of appreciate what it is we love about him and this album so much. Because really, if nothing else, this is a podcast about loving something and just trying to explain it to that love to other people, even if it doesn't make sense.
Even if it doesn't make sense, and even if we get sidetracked by Bruce Springsteen and WG Sebald.
And you know what? They will do that to you. Well, until next time, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mar, for I am a rain dog too.
And you might just be a rain dog too. So stick with us and we'll find out.
Thank you for listening. This has been a WTF production. See you next time.